Feeling stressed? Tearing your hair out at work? Feeling overwhelmed by the pace of the world we live in? Well, the Isle of Man Praying the Keels Week may just be the answer. It runs all through next week, and organisers Reverend Canon Janice Ward, Phil Crane and Andrew Foxon join me in the studio to tell you all about it. First of all, Andrew Foxon.
So there's a group of people who come together in order to organise the week and the range of events. And they come from a range of backgrounds.
Yes, yeah. I mean, we're not a formal charity. We've no legal status. We're just a few keen volunteers from different churches who recognise the value in exploring the countryside, the physical and the spiritual side to that. And we meet several times during the year to begin to plan at the outset and review how the past year's gone, and then begin to put some flesh on the bones of the following year's programme.
And of course, when this whole Praying the Keels thing started, you were all a lot younger than you are now.
It's funny that, isn't it? It does seem to happen that way.
Yeah. That was 2006, I believe, at the initiative of the then Bishop Graham Knowles.
Yes, that's right.
And he, as a come-over, recognised the value of the these gems dotted throughout the countryside. He must have been introduced to them. And I think on his behalf, it was an attempt to kind of reclaim them from the church in a way that we sort of took them for granted and certainly wouldn't go out of the way to visit. And he saw that, hang on, there's something here that will resonate and chime with the people, and organise the Keels Week. It's usually been on the fourth week of May, but I think we had one tried September or later, but for the last 10 years we've settled on this period at the end of May.
And for those who don't know, what are keels?
Well, they're that's the word that's used in Manx for chapel, really. In other parts of the Celtic West, you find place names beginning K-I-L, kill, and it's the same word. It comes from a Latin word originally meaning a monk's cell. And then you get places like Kilkenny or Kilmarnock, and here we use keel. And they're small places scattered through the Manx landscape in a way that we don't really see in any other part of the Celtic West. Perhaps as many as 160, 170 of them. And they were small chapels in the landscape, usually about 5 metres long, about 3 metres wide. And although people have tried to give it a single purpose to them, they certainly are religious places. They're aligned. They sometimes have burial sites around. They will have an altar. They'll have a doorway. There's usually a window, certainly on the south side and occasionally above the altar on the east end. And sometimes there are other things, crosses or white quartz pebbles are built in or left with them. Some of them, to us, are very isolated, and they may not have been so isolated then. But it looks as if some of them were wayside shrines or chapels or family chapels associated with community burial sites. And then in a couple of places, there are groups of them which we understand are part of monastic sites, Celtic Christian monastic sites. So thinking particularly of St Patrick's Isle, but particularly at Macholt.
And the I don't know whether I'm recollecting correctly, but most of the treens of the Isle of Man seem to have a keel associated with them.
Yes,
and of course, treens are divisions of parishes.
Yes, that's right. And certainly, one of the approaches suggested that there was a keel within every treen, and many of the treens do have them. I think more recent discussions have suggested that that's not quite as likely as it was, But personally, I still find it quite a nice explanation as to that distribution and why there are so many on the island.
And of course, the sites are known, but if anyone is going along to see what a very, very ancient Celtic chapel would have looked like, they'd be sorely disappointed with what remains, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't oversell them because they are all in ruins, and you might get some at the most where the walls rise about a metre above the ground. And as Andrew said, you can often see the doorway is often usually clearly shown, maybe a space for the window if you're lucky. The roof made of thatch or timber, probably originally long gone, of course, and many of the stones have been taken out for construction, which there's a legend that does not bring good luck to the farmer who did it, using for his farm. And I think that there's a lot we don't know about them. We don't really know the purpose, the function of them, probably almost certainly not for congregational worship in the modern sense of the word, but perhaps an itinerant hermit priest would visit in the old days for mass or for baptism or funerals. We've certainly, there's evidence of many where there's a graveyard outside, as Andrew said, and but maybe like the link to latrines, maybe perhaps for an extended farming clan, you know, in that area, where a priest would show up for certain occasions and then move on. Certainly there's evidence of hermit cells where he could have stayed for a few nights, perhaps. We just don't know. There's a lot of speculation in there.
But what is clear is that at the period these were being built, they were all over the island, and quite clearly Christianity had taken a very strong hold. I mean, what is the sort of period that we start first seeing keels, or is that not that easy
to say?
That's
such a good question. I wish we had the answer. So traditionally we would be, so I've used the word Celtic, which is a dangerous word in its own right, because it means different things at different times to different people. So we think of the arrival of Christianity on the Isle of Man 7th century, 6th century, and we certainly have burial sites with people being buried in a Christian tradition and aligned more or less east-west from those periods. And often what people have assumed is that the chapels are built and the graveyards, the cemeteries are built around them. David Wilson, island resident and expert Viking specialist, has argued that actually we don't really have any evidence for the keels themselves being built until perhaps the 11th and 12th century, a period where the island is very much under Norse rule and Norse control. Vikings arriving around us maybe about 800 AD and then settling sometime after that, coming as a people who have their own beliefs but then adopt Christianity, get very enthusiastic about it. So in terms of what does that mean to what we see? What we see, those places where there are archaeological remains that can be seen, foundations or low walls, and I think particularly about Keel Vale on Chapel Hill, Balladool, is probably the easiest and most accessible example. What we're seeing there is the foundations of a building from the 12th century, from the Norse period, but on the site of something earlier, and probably the site of something earlier and earlier and earlier. So what we see surviving is from its latest phase, when the Norse had converted to Christianity. Whether they were building on the site of something from the 7th or 8th century, we don't really fully know. And part of the issue is the excavations that were done, a lot of them were at the beginning of the 20th century, using techniques and approaches that have not been helpful to us now. They were done to the best of their ability at the time, but we now know. So the simple answer is, we wish we knew. We certainly have the buildings from 11th and 12th century. On some of the sites, there is probably something earlier, but I can't point to the strict evidence of it.
And what you need is, ideally, somebody building one of these sites needed to have put up, Andrew built this 1850, or Phil was here 753 or whatever.
It would be perfect.
That would have been useful.
It would be perfect, yeah. We actually, so that there is one interesting inscription, one of the inscriptions at Macholt is one of the Jew and the Priest inscriptions where he invokes Malachy, one of the bishops in Ireland, and we know the death of that man, so we can say it has to be after he's died. So it gives us a date for the inscription, but it doesn't give us a date for the building in which it was found, or the area it was found. No, that would be perfect. Or evidence from radiocarbon dating or those sorts of dating techniques. But hopefully that's something that at some point in the future, when we ask those questions of the right site, we'll be able to bottom a bit.
And presumably there may yet be keels that we don't know about on the island.
I think there may be remains where there were some, but they weren't recognised in previous times, and they have survived to a degree, maybe as archaeological remains under the ground, or sites that were investigated earlier where there's certainly still potential to find out more.
And conversely, though, there's a danger that we're going to lose some, because as I mentioned, the walls have got lower and lower over the centuries. Of stones have been given away. There's other threats to them, I suppose. That some are barely visible at all. Many have just disappeared from the landscape that are marked on old ordnance survey maps from the 19th century. They've gone. There's no visible remains there. All we've got is the evidence on the old map, the word keel. And some have been trampled by cattle. Katie Newton deserves mention. Back in 2016, I think she and her friend Nicola, they went out and made a point of visiting every visible keel, I think about 40, on the island during that calendar year. A remarkable achievement.
And they took cake as well, remember?
They took cake. It was keels and cake. and it's still available on the internet, keels and cake. It wasn't just a cosy visit. She went into a lot of in-depth research. As a country girl, she knew the landowners in many cases, and she got access, but she went into great time and trouble to investigate the research of everyone, and that is an outstanding record of, and we will often consult it to get the background on a particular keel, and that was excellent. I think the most intact keel, and this is cheating, is the one in the grounds of Peel Cathedral, because it's a replica, and that was built again about 5-6 years ago, up to roof level. It still hasn't got a roof.
So this is the new St. Germans as opposed to the old St. Germans on St. Patrick's Isle.
This was constructed as part of the Cathedral Gardens project, and I think it's one of the earliest gardens there. I think dating from the 6th and 7th century, perhaps, is the first times, as Andrew said. And that gives you a good feel in terms of its size and its height. Yeah, and there's they've decorated the eastern end as with quartz pebbles. They've got a replica of the Calf Crucifixion cross as well there. So if you want to get an idea of what it was like physically, that's probably the best to go to. But it is a replica.
And I know from our family farm down at Pool of Ash, the Keel Parlen, all that is left is a memory, basically. Yes. There's a name on a map, yeah. And occasionally I think my father has ploughed up a stone and then buried it quickly because he didn't want a whole load of archaeologists coming in. But one thing about that area was just below where the keel was the most wonderful well.
Yes.
And we used to get fantastic water whenever the... Because back in those days, when I was young, the water would be disconnected for various reasons. There'd be problems. We were the end of the line.
Mm.
And so whenever the water was off, we'd go out and draw water from the well. And most beautiful taste in water. It's right next to the beach, of course, down there. And for those who are listening to this who think, gosh, maybe I don't particularly want a history lesson, that's not what Praying the Keels is all about, though, is it? I mean, it's important to have a feel for the age and the history of the sites, but the Praying the Keels has a different kind of objective.
Yes, certainly. And I think Bishop Graham, when he started this ball rolling, was keen very much to offer the public a different way in. People maybe are curious about religion, about Christianity, but reluctant to darken the doors of a church. You know, they've got issues, perhaps rightly, with organised religion. But this perhaps is an easier way in to test the waters, to satisfy that curiosity, and also it offers a chance to slow down. You know, for many people, you know, they're not happy with the frenetic pace of life today, and it offers a chance to explore in company, a kind of a mini pilgrimage. So you've got we never rush the pace of these walks, but it's for those who are wanting to raise their physical fitness, it's a chance to stretch out. On the Saturdays we usually offer a full day walk, and to top and tail the week, and it's a chance to slow down. And perhaps it's when we do slow down we're more open to the numinous in liminal spaces where the veil perhaps might become thinner. And there is a poem, if I may, on this by Michael Lunig. It's at the it's in the Triskelion Way booklet, a guidebook which we published. And if I may read that. We pray for another way of being, another way of knowing. Across the difficult terrain of our existence, we have attempted to build a highway, and in so doing, have lost our footpath. God, lead us to our footpath. Lead us there where, in simplicity, we may move at the speed of natural creatures and feel the earth's love beneath our feet. Lead us there where, step by step, we may feel the movement of creation in our hearts. And lead us there where, side by side, we may feel the embrace of the common soul. Nothing can be loved at speed. God, lead us to the slow path, to the joyous insights of the pilgrim, another way of knowing, another way of being. Amen. And that's a poem by Michael Lunig, the Australian poet and author.
You're listening to Perspective with Praying the Keels Week organisers Phil Crane and Andrew Foxon. And of course, what you get, which we are perhaps not that good at these days, is just actually being out in the countryside And being silent, which, you know, there are occasions during these walks where there is silence, and you get to, you just get this amazing experience of the world, that, and it's a completely different world to the one which most of us lead most of our lives in, you know, that busy technological life with all sorts of things, with engines and radios, well, probably not even radios these days, devices, computers, whatever it may be, spewing information at you on a second by second basis, and actually just being able to stand and listen to nature, listening to the birds singing, because of course evening walks, it's a great time because you get quite a lot of chatter from birds, and it's just a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. I think what we try to do with Praying the Keels Week is to create a series of events, walks, a coach trip, explorations that are for a range of abilities, range of distances, range of challenges, but they're safe spaces where people can share and have time on their own. We spend an awful lot of our time travelling from one place to another. This focuses on the journey in between. It's about the being together and sharing and personal experience in the landscape. And that landscape has what we have now, but it also has traces from distant pasts to explore and to listen to. There's what we bring into the landscape when we walk, but there's also what we can experience in the landscape when we slow down and stop and make ourselves open in company. And that certainly I find, and a lot of people find that very, very rewarding and regrounding.
And it is awe-inspiring, really, to think that people have been coming to these sites for 1,500 or more years and doing very similar sorts of things, just getting that inspiration from place and from being together with people. It's a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can simply put your forehead against one of these stones. I think someone carved this perhaps 1,500 years ago, and make a link. You know, the you don't have to sort of be open to the vibes, man, but you just have to make the link. Someone carved that stone that I'm touching now, and go back in history. How many people over that 1,000 years have come and touched and just been open to nature or worship in that place? And it goes back, and we resonate with our forefathers.
I wonder in 1,500 years whether people will be getting the same level of inspiration from a digitally recorded emails and what have you. I suspect not.
I suspect not as well.
And we're finding evidence, aren't we, now that you know, improved mental health it comes from both taking time to be in nature. You know, you don't have to be religious, you just appreciation of nature. Yeah. And secondly, being in company. Mm. You know, especially, you know, maybe post-COVID, where we retreated into our own shells, we're more time by ourselves. That's not good for our mental well-being. And so, you know, again, these walks offer a chance to be in nature and be in company. And there are times when, you know, during a walk, we pause from time to time. And you know, if you don't like the person you're walking with, the cards are shuffled and you can choose someone else. You know, you're not stuck with someone for 2 or 3 hours necessarily. And there are times, as you said, Phil, where we just take time out and we encourage people to say, well, we're going to walk the next mile in silence. And in that silence, we're open to whatever comes. And I think just not talk. talking makes us more sensitive to the sights, the sounds, the smells that are all around us.
And the things that we experience from that. And we all experience different things because we're different people. And being comfortable in being different people, responding in different ways, is really important, because we get lots of pressures to be channeled to respond in particular ways.
Indeed. And you are doing some channeling. What is the timetable for the week? Because it started yesterday on the Saturday, but there's a whole load of events that will be taking place.
So the first event was yesterday, the 18th, and we met at Santon and we did a 5-mile walk, taking in the coastal path and round there. So people brought lunch, and we spent some time exploring the area of around Port Greenock. On Sunday afternoon, we're trying something different this time. A short walk, no more than 3 miles, in Maroun. We meet at 4:30 in the primary school car park, and then we will walk along to the Kialet Glen Lock, just off the TT course near the campsite there. And although it's close to the main road, it's not widely known, and it's a beautiful little gem of a keel. And we'll have some short prayers and reflections there before walking back along to Maroun Parish Church, where the Mariners will be singing that evening, and we shall join them. And I didn't mention that the theme this year is the sea, which chimes with the bicentenary of the RNLI, and so that will be woven into a few of the events that we see. And what better way than to join the Mariners Choir, and that will go on till 9 o'clock.
A nice gentle start on the Sunday. Do we get challenged a bit more as the week goes on?
I suppose the next challenge, the longer walk, is going to be the following Saturday the 25th, where we're connecting the two keels that you can't see anything of but are very much connected with the sea and with springs, and from St Catherine's in Port Erin, and then walking via the Howe over to Port Lamurra, to Port St Mary. And that's one of our longer walks. But in the middle of all that, there are a whole range of shorter walks. On the Monday, we're in Ramsey doing an exploration around Ramsey with Marinda Farger. And then we've got Peter Kelly doing a talk about really the Roman Catholic Church and its position on the Isle of Man that evening, up at St Anthony's in Onchan.
The Roman Catholic Church has, in recent centuries, had perhaps a less prominent role on the island. But if we're going back to the time of the keels, well, I don't know. How did the various branches of Roman Christianity work? Because I think the bit that settled England was different to the Celtic bit. Was that right?
Yes, I think if you go back far enough, I mean, the keels, of course, in a sense, are all Catholic. You know, they predate the Reformation. But I think, you know, in terms of, I don't think we're sure where Manx Christianity originated from. I think some people will say it probably came from Ireland, early Irish missionaries, maybe as early as the 5th, 6th century. There's another school of thought which says it was Ninian from this base at Candida Casa up in Whithorn. Would have been very visible. The Isle of Man would have been very visible from there too. And that would have had an influence, especially in the northern parishes. But it's interesting that even to this day, the Roman Catholics on the island will go down each Tynwald Day to Lagnacilia and celebrate the Mass down at that at that point. Yeah, and in the beautiful little keel, very isolated and remote, down at Lagnacilia. And if you stand at the clearly the doorway of Langnacillia, just below Irakushlin, you look out and you go straight out to the summit of Slieve Donard, the highest peak of the Mourns, Mountain Mourns in County Down. And I personally don't believe that's a coincidence. You know, maybe those early Irish missionaries built it and looking straight out to sea, back to their homeland.
And of course, you mentioned that it's isolated, but I don't know, I pick these things up, so maybe I've got this wrong, but there was quite a significant community just east of the Slough, and it's believed, of course, that people came from that end to Langnacillia.
Yes.
And actually, it's not that far for them to get there.
It's isolated now, but there was a route, especially a pack horse route and a route along the coast there. So in its original time, it wasn't it was on a route way along the coast there. But as Phil says, you're looking straight over towards County Down, and you know where Patrick came from at Saul, and Slieve Donard was one of those Irish peaks of pilgrimage as well.
And you had that wave, I suppose, of early evangelization coming in from either Ireland or Scotland. It would have been the Celtic, again, as Andrew said, a difficult word, but the Celtic branch of Christianity. And Columba landed in Iona in 563, I think, and that spread into Scotland and the north of England, Northumbria. Not too distant in time from when Augustine was landing in Kent, sent by Pope Gregory, was it 504, and bringing the Roman version up from the south. And they differed, but they had Christ, Jesus Christ, at the centre in each case. But they differed in certain ways. I mean, the Celtic Church, perhaps with more emphasis on the elements, on the waves, on the sun, as we see the circle on the Celtic cross, and more open to a less hierarchical perhaps form of organization compared to the Roman. And of course they met, I think, at the Synod of Whitby to thrash out some of the differences, not least the formula for the date of Easter and the shape of the monk's tonsure, his hairstyle, and you know, you think, what they those were that was the agenda then, and you wonder what historians in 500 years time are going to think about today's church agenda, so there was those two waves going on in the 6th century, right at the start.
So Peter Kelly then has inspired us to go out and seek these keels. What happens then thereafter in terms of the programme?
Okay, on the following day, Tuesday, it's an evening walk up to St Patrick's Church, Jerby, where we're meeting at 7 o'clock, and we'll have a look around the churchyard there. Jerby's interesting, they've discovered two new cross slabs recently, so they may or may not be ready to be on display there, but we'll hear about them certainly. And then we will take a walk, just a short walk, 2 miles in all, to Kielkickle. And Kickle is the Manx for Cecilia, Saint Cecilia, the patron saint of music. And Phil, a special guest that evening will be none other than your very own Kerjan Kuja, who've kindly agreed to sing for us in the church and at the Kiel. So that will be very special.
Yes, unfortunately, I think Tynwald's sitting that day, and I'm covering it for the radio. So I will hope that they don't overrun on their sitting, because it finishes at 6:30. But very much looking forward to that, and I know we've been practicing hard. But it's great, again, great being able to sing outside and singing at some of these sites. It's a wonderful experience. So then we move on to Wednesday.
Yeah, I'll take that one. So not everyone can get out and walk, so one of the things that we've done each year is to have a coach trip, and so that coach trip will be leaving from Douglas at 7, and then we're effectively going to follow the route of the TT course round, exploring a couple of places as we go, and we finish part of the tour at Kirkmackold, where we're going to have an evening tea, and then we'll make our way back, weather permitting and roads permitting, over the mountain and back to Douglas. So that provides a different way of visiting, travelling and talking as we go.
So that's Wednesday, then we move on to Thursday.
Thursday, if people are free in the afternoons, we will explore the peninsula around Scarlet. We meet at 2 o'clock in the car park, at St Mary's on the Harbour in Castletown. We'll meet there and for a brief service, and then we will walk around Scarlet Head along the coastal path as far as the wonderful site at Balladool, which includes Keel Vale, the Manx for Michael, and it's a very well manicured site there with wonderful views out over the Bay na Carrickie to Port St Mary. And also inland. You don't think it's very high, but it's higher than you get, and there's good views from there, right over to the range of hills. You can see Snaefell on a clear day. So we will spend a little time for prayers at the keel there, but also we won't ignore the Viking ship burial, which is also in that site, and there's Bronze Age kists there, which it's a very rich site, and it's a promontory Iron Age site in itself. So a lot to explore there. And then we'll continue along the road, taking in, passing Pulvash Farm, and going around there and coming back inland to back to the school, back to Castletown. So that is quite a lengthy afternoon walk, say an early start at 2 o'clock, and it'll be about 5 miles altogether.
That then brings us on to Friday.
Not quite, because something on Thursday evening too. And again, this is for non-walkers, but walkers are equally welcome, although spaces are limited. And it's at Tide of A, the new-ish retreat house in Peel. They have kindly offered to put on an armchair pilgrimage for us this year, which went down very well when they did it last year. And sticking with the nautical theme, they are celebrating Brendan the Navigator, one of the early Celtic saints who reputedly travelled thousands of miles over land and in his coracle. The Tide of A folk are going to be exploring through that lens of St Brendan's what it is to journey out and trust to God on the wild waves. So I mentioned booking is necessary for that, as it is for the coach trip, because spaces are limited in each case.
And I'm guessing, I have this sort of vision of people being wheeled around in armchairs. I presume it doesn't quite work like that.
No, they've got a very comfy lounge, but the seating is fixed. But they might well decide to use the gardens.
So then we get onto Friday.
Onto Friday, yes. So we try to explore as many parts of the island as we can each year. So on Friday we'll be in Peel, and we're beginning at the RNLI station, so making that connection with the sea and the RNLI at 7 o'clock. And then the rest of the time, courtesy of Manx National Heritage, we're inside Peel Castle on St Patrick's Isle. And there are a number of keels, chapels, churches, cathedrals in there. So we'll explore partly that story, but also some worship in there at the end of towards the end of the week. It's time so that if the weather's kind, and let's hope it is, we'll be able to watch the sunset in Sunset City at about 9:30. That will be a good way to spend an evening.
I think that's got us to the end of the calendar, because we mentioned the the last Saturday at the very start, didn't we? What are you hoping for? Each of you, what's going to be your standout moment? Would you hope from this?
We're hoping for sunshine.
Yes, it has been a bit damp underfoot, hasn't it?
Yeah. So for me, I find it easier to be in the evenings. I like the end of the day. I like the sense that the day is coming to the end, and it's a time to move things that have stressed me in the day out. So for me, the highlights are going to be up in Jerby and St Patrick's Isle.
I'll be very pleased if we get some people we don't know along. Mm. To any or all of the events, you know. Sometimes, you know, in the past, we've been people who we don't know. It's lovely to meet them, and they've maybe heard about it. Maybe they'll hear about it on this radio show, and to offer them a warm welcome and to get to know them. Often they're new to the island and they've just picked it up. What on earth is a keel? What's this all about? But you know, if you just want a lovely walk. Come along, and hopefully we'll offer some Manx hospitality and a warm welcome.
That was Phil Crane and Andrew Foxon. Another member of the committee is the Reverend Janice Ward.
I'm the Reverend Canon Janice Ward, the minister for the parish of Moraine, Foxdale and Baldwin, and one of those on the Pray and the Keels committee, which is a great privilege. It's wonderful to be involved with such a unique and wide-ranging set of events on the island.
We've heard a bit from Phil and Andrew about what's happening and about the history of keels and that kind of thing. Obviously, you're the Reverend. What is the sort of spiritual element to this, and why is that important, do you think?
I think we live in a society where, on the one hand, we marginalise and sideline something of the spiritual aspects of life. We favour technology and science and things like that, and see that as the way forward. But we neglect our spiritual side, I think, whilst at the same time having a hunger for it, something deep within us that is unfulfilled. And it's a myth that science and technology and spirituality are not mutually beneficial. We need all of those things, especially in modern society. But I think we struggle to find that spiritual element that comes through praying the keels, and the peace and the oneness with nature that comes through that week's activities.
And you don't have to be a Christian, practicing Christian, to come on these trips, do you?
No, absolutely not. You don't have to be a person of faith at all, but somebody that enjoys nature, that loves to be outdoors. Perhaps you don't feel that you get enough opportunities to do that sort of thing, and appreciate also perhaps a little guidance as well. So there are always people to lead the events. But just that opportunity to be out and about in the beautiful Manx countryside that we have, and have that peace and serenity that sometimes we lack in daily life in our busyness.
And we are very lucky, aren't we, in the Isle of Man, that there are so many of these ancient sites. And of course, a lot of the sites of the keels are in quite isolated but very beautiful parts of the island, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, we have such a rich and deep heritage here. And sometimes it is rather hidden because these keel sites are tucked away sometimes. Some of them are more visible than others, and some of them are on private land or not easily accessible sites. So we are very fortunate that the Keels Committee sometimes have access to places that others would not be able to get to.
In relation to the various events that are taking place this week, have you got any particular things that you're looking forward to? Are there particular sites that you're looking forward to visit, perhaps that you've not been to before, or places that you have been to before that you really enjoy?
I'm very much looking forward to the visit to the south of the island, to around Castletown and that area, and just being able to explore in a guided way some of those places that perhaps I've missed in the past, and be able to look out to sea and just experience all of that wonderful coastline and things, and see those little nooks and crannies that the casual visitor might miss.
The committee obviously, I know it involves three people because we've had Phil and Andrew and yourself. Presumably there are more on the committee, and presumably it's quite a challenge to organise something like this.
Indeed, there are six more members. And we literally start the next year's programme as soon as this year's programme has finished. We do a bit of a debrief to see what worked well, if there were any things that didn't perhaps go as we had planned, and then to think about the coming year, what themes we might want to explore and what different places we might like to visit as well, so that we, over the years, as time goes by, we get a good spread of going around the island as well and different locations.
And of course, this year's theme had to be the RNLI, didn't it?
It did, yes, that's right. That was an easy theme, if you like, to pick up on, and all of the celebrations around that. And of course, we have such magnificent coastline, and many of the keel sites do are located near to those sites as well and near to the coastline. So that was a very obvious theme for this year.
What would you say then to someone who's listening to this and thinking, praying, that's not something I do, keels, that's something to do with the church, that's another thing I don't do? What would you do to encourage them to think again?
Well, I would just encourage people to go onto the website or onto the Facebook page or pick up one of the leaflets and just have a look at what's on offer. Because there really is something for everyone, and you don't have to have any religious affiliation at all to appreciate any of the things that are going on. And I'm sure you will find something to dip your toe into. You know, feel the sand between your toes as we celebrate the sea and our connection with it, and just be brave and give it a go.
And this isn't an overtly evangelistic exercise, is it? I mean, people can go and remain of their non-belief if they are non-believers, or whatever other faith they may have. You know, this isn't an attempt by the church to overtly influence people, is it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, this is very much an opportunity to connect spiritually in its widest interpretations. So there is no expectation on the part of the organisers or anybody else that's involved in any way evangelising or anything like that. We do have refreshments and connections with local places of worship, but this is very much an open and general invitation to just come along and enjoy, with no expectations that people are going to want to join any of the churches or chapels or anything else in an organised nature like that. No.
And we're recording on one of the most glorious days you could hope for in May. Presumably you will be doing a little bit of praying that the week will be as glorious.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if it can be a day as beautiful as this one, then that would be wonderful. But the countryside is absolutely gorgeous, whatever the weather. And we have taken that into account as we've organised walks and things like that. So whilst we are hoping and praying that the weather will be magnificent, I'm sure whatever it turns out to be, it will still be a fantastic week.
That was the Reverend Canon Janice Ward, one of the Praying the Keels Week organisers. Are you inspired to attend one of the events? Do we need a bit of spirituality in our adrenaline-fueled, multimedia, busy lives? Perhaps you think it's all a load of nonsense and one person's Christian heritage is another's pile of stones for hardcore. Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. Manx choir Kurjan Kujak has been providing the incidental music. So for now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gora maius an geisiach rum. Thanks for listening.
she